coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm.
Well, hello everybody and happy Tuesday night. I guess it's happy. I mean, I hope everybody is ready for a great evening of conversation. We are currently waiting on the amazing Lynn Buchanan to join us. He is wrapping up a live webinar as we speak. In the second part of our episode tonight, we will be joined by our good friend, Reverend Michael J.S. Carter. Of Ancient Aliens and other shows to discuss para experiences and faith, both how people who have para experience come to faith after frequently, and also how people of faith handle para experience. So we will be getting into that conversation in the second part and dealing with faith and para experience. You know, it's funny because here recently my brother was somebody, and I've had two or three other people ask me, like, you used to do a news of the week segment at the beginning of every show where, like, the first 5 minutes was just going over news stories and kind of waxing about them and things that we'd posted in the group and stuff like that. It was confirmed probably a couple hours ago that David Wilcock of Ancient Aliens and other programs on Gaia Network, all kinds of things, that he had taken his own life in front of the Boulder police. So many prayers for all involved in that response situation. Many prayers for David, for his family in this time. It really is. And it's something, you know, that it's something I have private conversations with people about all the time. I have been a depression sufferer for years, anxiety, things like that. It's one of those, there's a great quote from Robin Williams that depression hides behind a smile. You know, you never really know. I'm very sorry for the families. I know David had been going through a lot of things in the last few years. There had been a lot of things community-wise, stuff like that. So anyway, it just brings up the fact of whether or not we pay attention to those around us, whether or not we actively realize some of the stresses that these people go through who are researchers, that are in this movement of disclosure of research into these topics. It can be very solitary work, as we talk about regularly on the show. It is cutthroat sometimes. It's very rough. The fact that you can trust very few people sometimes with ongoing research, with research that you're working on, with research that you are trying to make headway with. Because if you let leak before you're ready, even depending on how you publish, people may come in and try to literally take your work that you've spent years and years on, you know. And it's not necessarily about the fact of doing work to be aggrandized. It's more the fact of at least getting credit where credit is due, at least getting credit for the work that you have done. And despite many things that once again popped up within the UFO UAP community over the last many years, involving people like Corey Good and stuff like that, and David's attachment to said people. Aside from that, David had an amazing career. David was an amazing researcher. He had all kinds of work behind him, books, shows, series, So to see this tragedy play out in real time, within our community, to literally see the echoes happen on social, like I saw one response on social media, I saw another response on social media, and then other people, like, it's not really confirmed yet, then somebody else, and then lo and behold, like, remembrance services, things like that. And then reports from like Hindustan Times and other people coming out. So it's one of those, take care of the people that you love, keep an eye on the people that you love, and always remember the stresses that these communities and that this research can sometimes put on people. And speaking of which, speaking of amazing people who have worked for years and years in fields and been there with people through things, with communities through things, and especially with the remote viewing community through things. Our guest in this segment is Lynn Buchanan. He has just joined us, folks. So you can find out more about Lynn Buchanan and all of his controlled remote viewing protocols, programs, his amazing classes, which I have taken. CRviewer.com is his website. Welcome back to the show, Lynn Buchanan. How are you this evening, my friend?
Fine. Sorry I'm late.
That's okay.
Lori Williams is gone for the week, and I was taking her class and got to talking and all of a sudden somebody said, weren't you supposed to leave?
Weren't you supposed to be somewhere, Lynn?
Yeah, please quit talking.
but that's beautiful, though, because once again, you have literally been involved with the remote viewing community since the beginnings of remote viewing, and especially the military controlled remote viewing, you were a founding member of IRVA.
Yeah, I'm a founding member of IRVA. There's an argument as to when remote viewing developed, you know, caveman day. Yeah. How old is it? And also the CRV that the military used, had been going for 10 years before I got moved into the unit.
Yeah.
So, I can't claim pioneering status on hardly any of it.
No. But it is something that, once again, you have been out in the community for a long time. And
oh, yeah.
It's
30 years now. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And things really became like declassified as far as Project Stargate. Like, what was it, 93?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I remember that's when I first started hearing about SRI. That's when they started hitting the airwaves on things like Coast to Coast AM and stuff like that. Like I remember ordering the SRI videotape.
Yeah. Ed Dames, who passed away last week.
Yep.
Is the one who's responsible for bringing it out to the public.
Yeah.
He started telling secrets, and I called him and I said, Ed, you're giving classified information to the public and they're going to come get you. And he said, yeah. And when they do, it will be their admission that I was telling the truth. And sure enough, they never came to get him.
That is it's interesting because that is a huge chess piece. That's a huge chess move in that kind of way. And I've even said that about people like Lou Elizondo. You know, because the videos that he first came from, whether or not you like Lou Elizondo, folks, like the big D disclosure movement and conversation we are having is a lot due to him and his appearance on CNN with two videos that were not cleared for media publication. Right. They were cleared for interdepartmental use and things like that. But as far as like clearance to take him to the media, no. And that was a that was a huge chess move on his part to be like, yeah. Well, let's see what happens. Let's see what they do.
He's lucky that it worked.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. As was Ed, you know, and I've got some interesting questions tonight from audience members, okay. Lynn. And I'm looking forward to getting into them. Before we get into that, let's start with your beginnings. How did you first come to the world of specifically remote viewing and understanding what this is?
I was stationed in Augsburg, Germany, and all of my life, you know what a poltergeist kid is, right?
Yes.
One that every time they get excited, things fall off shelves and all that. That's actually a very common thing. And most kids are trained out of it by their parents and other people. My mother encouraged it. And I was encouraged all along, and I developed it and developed it. And so whenever I get angry, it's not good for whoever I get angry about. But there in Augsburg, they had asked me to write a program that would tie the computers, the classified computers of 12 countries together. There were 12 countries at the field station there. And this other sergeant had wanted the job of writing the program. I got the job. And when months later, when I went to demonstrate the thing, all the generals were gathering into the room. I slipped out, went to the bathroom to make sure my hair was in place and no wrinkles in my uniform and all that, went back. And I gave my little song and dance, you know, an intro to it, and turned around to make the example, you know, and I hit the enter key and the screen went dead. And everybody started chuckling at me. And I turned around and this other sergeant was at the back door and he said, "Gotcha," and turned around and left. And I got flaming angry. When I did, the entire field station went down, all the computers. There was one estimate that was told to me a couple of months later that I had basically fried almost $50 million worth of computer equipment.
Oh, man.
And, so anyway, we recovered from that. We would go to work on the bus and come back, you know, on the shuttle bus and make it look to Russian spy in the sky like we were at work as normal. We didn't know that they were doing the same because it fried most of theirs too. Anyway, there was a captain there who had been trained by General Stubblebine, the head of the Intelligence and Security Command, to look for these psychic events. He was very interested in it. And that captain just happened to be in the room. He said he just wanted to see that many generals in one place. And he saw it, he recognized it for what it was, and reported me. And so at a later time, we were getting back up and running again. And General Stubblebine came out to put a new commander, you know, to have a change of command ceremony and put a new commander as the commander of the field station. And they came in and said, "The general wants to see you. He wants you in his office." And that gave me time to go home, get on my Class A's, you know, my Class A uniform, come back. And so as soon as the big ceremony was over, the new commander and General Stubblebine came walking into the commander's office. And General Stubblebine came up to me and said, "You're Sergeant Buchanan?" And there's my name tag. And I didn't say, well, duh, you know, the general. And And I said, yes, sir. And he said, follow me. Grab my arm, and push me in front of him. Now, you follow the general. And so I walked into the new commander's office, and General Stubblebine came in behind me. The new commander came in behind the general. The general turned around to the new commander and said, I need to talk to Sergeant Buchanan. Get out. You can imagine what four-letter list I went to the top of.
Yeah, yeah.
It took me 2 months to be transferred. But those 2 months were total hell. And so anyway, just like in the Men Who Stare at Goats movie, General Stubblebine got right up in my face and said, did you kill my computers with your mind? And I knew I had. I had never said anything about it. I didn't want grandkids paying for computers. And I said, yes, sir, I did. And this grin came across his face, and he said, far effing out if I ever got a job for you. So anyway, he took me back to D.C. and petitioned to start a new unit that would destroy enemy computers with the end goal of learning how to control enemy computers to make their missiles turn around and go back or drop in the sea or whatever. Okay. Or just put bad information in. Congress said, no, that's mind control. We will not fund it. And so, you know, they got caught in the 60s doing mind control experiments.
Yeah.
And they weren't going to have that happen again. And so General Stubblebine said, okay, well, I've got a unit out here at Fort Meade. I'm going to put you in. And he took me out to the remote viewing unit and stuck me in there. And that's how I got into the unit.
So at that point, they were already running the Stargate program. Those things were already in place, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. They had been doing that for 10 years, before I got
here. It's interesting because one of the things that I regularly talk about and that people ask me about all the time is the ethics of it. You know, I even ask people who are mediums. I've asked you before on air, mm-hmm. Lynn, like, how do you filter it? How do you cut it off? You know, how do you walk into a room and not just read somebody? And is that invasive to do so in such a way?
Part of the English One technique that the military used, doing military targets and Saddam Hussein and all that, Idi Amin, who was a cannibal, we got horrible targets. Yeah. And the English One process has built-in protections for the viewer so that you don't get yourself all crazy. Yeah. And as you learn the CRV process, you learn to protect yourself from things like that. While you're learning, you may get some really disturbing situations, but it builds in the process itself protects you.
Well, but I mean, even the fact that, and granted, now the general's want with you was very specific, and that was for you to target inanimate objects, not for you to target the operators of computers,
right. Uh-huh.
For you to target the computers themselves. Now, Congress was like, No, that's mind control.
Yeah.
Which is interesting to begin with, that they're going to see the computer itself and you messing with the computer is mind control. However,
Congress knew as well that in order to attack a computer, it's easier to attack a programmer who runs the computer.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
And they knew that.
But the protocols for the military remote viewing program, as far as intervention or influence, were already in place.
They were already in place. Presidential Order 11905 was superseded by Presidential Order 12333, which forbade us from collecting intelligence information on U.S. citizens unless directed specifically by Congress.
Yeah.
And so we were to do no active mental work because they didn't want us doing active mental work, mind control.
Yeah.
And so they limited that. But also 1233 said you can't even collect intelligence on U.S. citizens. I don't know if you can see my background here, but over here, there's a mug that was given to me by Gary Gygax, the inventor of Dungeons and Dragons.
Epic.
Rose Estes, one of his authors, is an old friend of mine, and I was at his house one day for a party. He came around with a big plate of drugs, almost anyone you would want. And he was giving it to the people at the party. He stuck the thing up in, you know, toward me and said, take your pick. And I said, well, I can't because I have a drug test when I go back to work. And he said, what do you do? And I said, I'm a federal agent. See the color of these.
Can't really tell you what I do.
And I mean, it was like if Hutton spoke, the whole room got silent. So, and Rose, he looked over at Rose, and Rose said, he really is. And I said, don't worry, I'm not that kind of a federal agent.
Not that.
And the fact is that having seen those drugs and all that, I could not report him. That would be collecting intelligence on a U.S. citizen.
Yeah.
And so totally safe. So they went on with their party, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, even the fact that the military.
Anyway, that's a gift from him to me.
but that's the point that I bring up with people regularly is that, you know, it was used for intelligence gathering. It was used as a means, basically like being a human satellite. Is what you were. It was never used to target a person, to influence a person. It was like that's not what. Like once again, there were protocols in place with the military remote viewing program to prevent remote influencing of
with
people.
The remote viewing program. Let me tell you another thing that is not in the record book. Okay.
Okay.
When I first got there, the director had found out where I came from and why I was there and all that. And he took me into his office and he said, we collect intelligence here. You do not do active mental work. You do not do any influencing. You don't do any of this PK stuff. And he didn't use the word stuff, but, you know, he just read me the riot act. So I came out, and one of the people in the unit came up to my desk as I was settling into my desk and said, I guess Brian told you we don't do active mental work here. And I said, yeah, he made that clear. And he said, that's right. We don't do active mental work here. And turned around and walked off. And so that always made me think, no, but somebody does. I never found out who it would be, but.
Well, and you know, that is something that I bring up regularly when people ask me, like, number one, people regularly are like, you know, well, they canceled it because they didn't really get anything from it. And it's like, I don't really know about that.
No, that's not true.
That's not true at all. Yeah. As a matter of fact, they got some great information from it. If anything, no. What it was, and this is where I kind of stand, is that, yes, they canceled the program, as they do with many programs that they then want to hide within the folds and creases of a contractor program, where they can use an intelligence contractor who has private satellite or whatever, you know, to pass over an area, and use humint, whatever.
Yeah.
And that, that contractor is using, humint is human intelligence, folks.
Right. That way the Freedom of Information Act doesn't apply anymore.
That's right. That's right. And at that point, doing it through a contractor, you can, yes, absolutely say, we do not use.
That's right.
We don't use remote viewing. Our contractors do to gather information. So, yeah, like I guarantee you, remote viewing is still very much alive in the world of military intelligentsia, things like
that. Oh, well, I wouldn't know.
Good on you, Lynn.
Yeah.
but with that in mind, it's especially with things, and really, you know, like we should have gotten Greg Radebaugh in on this too. But yeah. I'm sure he would be even more quiet, because I'm about to ask you about things like Iran and what's going on in Iran right now. You know, like what kind of things would you, were the program still active, Lynn? Were you, if Stargate was still up, still running, what kind of things would you guys be focused on in this Iran situation right now? Like real world scenario, what would your daily be coming in?
We were very aware of the fact that each viewer has individual strengths and weaknesses. One of my strongest strengths was accessing people mentally. Okay. So Saddam Hussein, day after day, what are his plans and intentions? You know, other people are good at, or best at, describing things physically. And so they would get, you know, describe the equipment that's at this base, or like Joe, okay? They had this huge building. Describe what's inside the building. And he not only described it, he identified it and even drew pictures of it, drew sketches of it, accurate sketches. That was his thing. And so basically, to make a general answer to that question, whatever the needs of the intelligence community are, that's what we would be tasked with.
Yeah. Now, let's just war game this and scenario it. Let's say that you were given the target of the enriched uranium.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
This we are talking about something that, even by all reports right now, not really huge, the containers that it's stored in. You're talking about something maybe the size of a scuba tank.
Yeah.
There's all of a few of them, and hidden in an underground bunker so deep that, like, ground busters didn't get to it. You know, like under bunker busters, I mean, didn't get to it. So they're talking about sending in special forces, all kinds of things, which would be a major infiltration to go into. You'd be going in almost blind into a very deep underground facility to get a very hard target and bring it out. What kind of challenges would you be facing as a remote viewer in that situation? And how would that go? Because let's describe the targeting process and how you would receive the target to begin
with. First of all, what's already known? The location is known, okay? And the location within that area, that physical location, is already known. Okay.
Sure.
So you have troops that are going to go in and get to them. All right. What you really need to know is what resistance are they going to find? Will it be just armed guards? Will it be traps that give poison gas? What will it be? So you would need somebody who can locate those and describe them. Then you would need to know like the best time. Guard change time is always chaos. And you would need to know routes. And so there are people who can draw the floor plans of a building, you know. And so you would need to know all these things. And none of those would be viewing the radioactive stuff. So this is what I mean by whatever they need, that's what you get tasked with. What they need is to keep the soldiers safe.
Yeah.
So that's how the tasking is figured. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting. A, you bring up the very, very, very important scenario of why most of the time good remote viewing is done in teams. Why you have than one person focused on a target. Especially in that kind of situation, because once again, people pick up different things. Some people are different at picking up mechanical, the natural, you know, things like that.
This is why we keep a database on all of our viewers, students all the way through professional, to know what they're best at, what they're good at, what we can depend on, and what they say that we can't depend on because they're not good at it. And so we keep try to keep an immaculate database on all the work that's done and with each viewer, what they're good at, what they're not good at. We analyze their work and database it, document it.
Well, and that's just it. That's one of the truly beautiful things that I love about remote viewing is the data gathering, the amount of data that you are wanting to gather in that kind of way. And like I tell most people, if you are looking for proof of para in that kind of way, folks, remote viewing has more lab work. Like it was birthed in the lab.
Yeah. And thing is, these days people don't say, show me your proof.
Yeah.
They say, show me your data.
Well, but that's just it. That's what you should be saying to begin with. Not show me your proof. And in addition to that, the data is there. There's tons of data. Once again, cataloging those hits and misses as a viewer is hugely important because it eventually begins to give you your own bell curves. What are you better at detecting?
And that way you can not only tell what you're good at, but then you can go to your trainer, which would be me, and at this point, and say, hey, I'm not good at this other. Can we train toward that? I suck at shapes. Can you start giving me targets that have certain shapes?
Yeah.
You know, and that way we can customize the training. And another feature of the database is, let's say a company comes to me and they want information on projects that they're doing and all that. And they're going to invest millions of dollars in that. Okay. I have to show that I'm not pulling somebody off the street. I have to vet the viewers and say, listen, these are professional viewers. I can show you my data. And that has to be done. Yeah.
Well, and once again, not only that, but when honing in on a target or when taking care of information for, once again, a client who is looking for specific results or looking for confirmation on something, you can assemble the best team possible to be able to get the best results possible.
And so, we do that even with the pro bono stuff that we do. We do a lot of pro bono stuff. And, well, here, my background. When you when we do pro bono, they don't pay us, but I ask them to give me and each one of the viewers that works on it either a coffee cup or a baseball cap.
Yeah. Wow.
I've got a closet with a shelf that's just teeming with baseball caps. You know? And you can see, you can see these.
Yeah.
I have a shelf full of cups, another shelf full of cups. And so that is a reward for the viewers, even though they don't get paid.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I don't know anybody that does remote viewing that doesn't find it rewarding. Even the limited viewing I've done, Lynn, has changed the way that I view the world around me. To bring things back, what are the limits? What are the limits? Let's say that, once again, you have been asked to view your target. You've been given your tasking. That's basically how this works, folks. You are given an arbitrary target number. You don't know what the target is most of the time, improper controlled remote viewing, you don't. In some other forms of remote viewing, we should say that, associative remote viewing, things like that. You may well know what the target is in that case. But in controlled remote viewing, specifically this protocoled military and laboratory form, Ingo Swann form of remote viewing, you do not know. You are given an arbitrary target number. You are given an inanimate tasking of, describe the activity going on.
A non-coding tasking,
something.
That's it. Some people would task you with the target is a child abduction that happened, so-and-so and all this.
Sure.
Describe and all that. That's pollution. But if you have a complex target and you only give the coordinates, that's fine. A viewer can do that and will wind up describing the target after describing everything around it and the entire site and finally focusing down to the target. But if you say the target is a specific event, describe the event, okay?
Yeah.
That narrows it down to every event that's ever happened in time and space. It's not pollution. It just tells you, don't pay attention to all this stuff and everything else. Focus on the event. And so this is what's called front loading. And many people will say, well, that's pollution.
Mm.
But if done correctly, it's just telling the viewer, hey, there's a bunch of stuff here. Focus on this one aspect. Yeah. And so you will hear some people talking about front loading. And that's what the front loading is.
But here's the thing, though. Let's say, for instance, once again, this underground facility.
Yeah.
Is your target location where you're viewing, telling somebody to view the event, you aren't front loading at that point. There's tons of activity going on in an underground base.
That's right. Yeah.
That's arbitrary. So they'd still be able, I think, to tie. I don't consider it at that point pollution.
Yeah. In that example that you gave, the target of the project is to get that radioactive material, right?
Sure.
Which is an object. we could say describe the targets and object, describe the object, and the remote viewer gives something we already know what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. But if it's keeping the troops safe that go in, we would say the target is a process. Describe the process. And in that, they okay. would say, okay, first you have to do this, then you have to do this, then you have to do this.
Well, and that's interesting, even in the order of operations, as far as, once yeah. again, it's not like you're doing a single viewing for any, even for clients, it's not like you're doing a right. single viewing. You're frequently doing numerous viewings back to back. You're yeah. doing them over a course of days, weeks, months, especially sometimes, whenever yeah. gathering intelligence in this kind of way. Yeah. Yes, to have somebody describe the object. After that, you would probably want to task a couple people blindly to confirm said object.
A lot of times it will do that. You know what the target is, and you want to make sure that you can depend on the viewer.
Exactly.
They will say, okay, describe the object. If you describe the object correctly, then they'll say, well, there's a process involved. Describe the process. Because that gives them comfort.
Yeah.
Okay. Because many people don't believe data.
Yeah.
I mean, if you want to know if they're good, we'll look in the database and tell you how good they are.
Yeah. And that's just it, though, to be able to build on a profile like that on a case where it's like describe the object, then you task a couple other people with that same object to see if the same description comes back, see if similar descriptions come back. And then from there, you're tasking somebody else to how far down is that object? Where in the facility is the object? Once again, one person to, and a team of people to map the facility. How far down would somebody be able to map down? Lynn, is there a limit to that kind of information that you can gather remotely?
This is one of the phenomenal things about CRB. Limits in time and space don't happen. Anywhere in time and space, no problem. The limits to remote viewing are, first of all, the limit of your training and your ability, how well-trained and experienced you are. And the other is something that people fight against all the time, and that's your belief system. If you believe that you can't view a waterfall, then you're right. You can't.
Yeah.
Because your belief system puts a wall there. And when you finally believe I can view anything, that's your limit. I can view anything.
Well, and that's an important point to bring up. Here in the next couple of weeks, we've done a lot of psi, and we're going to keep doing a lot of psi, folks, just so you know. Yeah. But here in the last few weeks, we've done a lot of pre-record stuff. We've got Kim DeRosier coming on the show to talk about such things. We've got David Tran, one of the perceptualists from Psi Games, coming on to talk about training psi ability, things like that. And yes, it really does come down to that point of almost surrender, where you quit fighting, where you quit having that conflict of can't, you know, it really is the idea that no, it's all possible. Every bit of it.
Jim Williams has a point. Lori will be teaching a class, and he sort of instinctively knows when to peer into the room because he loves to watch that moment. And excuse language, that moment is when one of the students looks at their feedback, looks at their session, and says, "Oh shit, I can do this."
I have seen it.
I live for the moment. Yeah.
And I've been witness to, I've had my moment where it was like, oh shit. And that's just it. It's one of those. I am, if anything, Lynn, if I would say that I had any quote psychic or para ability, I would say that, I was maybe emotive in that kind of way, you know, very empathic, I guess.
Yeah.
I would say maybe that, but I am far from prognosticator or psychic in that kind of way. You know, I'm no clairvoyant. I'm not a medium in any way, shape, or form.
Well, you know, this is a thing that people don't understand. The CRV was never meant to be used for psychics. They can already do the work.
Yeah.
It was meant for people who think they have no psychic ability. It was meant for the grunt soldier on the battlefield, you know?
Yeah.
And it teaches you how to do the work of a top natural psychic without having to believe that you're a psychic whiz, you know, without the woo-woo, with no woo-woo, no mysticism, no anything else.
And
it's beautiful.
It really is. It really is. And once again, it is a hugely eye-opening experience. It truly changes your paradigm of thought. And it's one of those, like, I am a logical person. I'm pretty grounded in the way that I think. I have definitely had my paranormal experiences in life, that led me to all kinds of things. But the first time that I viewed and I got data, it was like, oh my God. Even my precognitive moment that happened before my first session, where my monitor texted me my target number for the next day, Lynn. and immediately I texted her back, I see white truss. Like what you'd put a radio antenna on, or like what I build for lighting in my industry for audio video, but powder coated white. My target ended up being the lunar rover. Which had white powder coated truss on it with the radio antenna. And it was just like, what? Immediately I was like, white truss. There was zero hesitation. And that's what's interesting, is that it's very radio receiver in that way.
Yeah. This is one of the things that sets CRV apart from psychic work. White is an adjective. Truck is a noun. Your subconscious mind does not use nouns. Your conscious mind uses nouns, and it is not psychic.
Yeah.
Okay. And so you get something like, I don't know what the target is, but it's big and it's yellow and it's noisy and it's traveling. And, it's a school bus. Okay. You look at your feedback and it's not a school bus, not anything like a school bus, but it is big. It is yellow. It is moving. It is noisy, and so on. Your descriptors. And when we tend to judge in training, when we tend to judge a viewer, first thing we do, throw out the nouns.
Yeah.
Just take the descriptors and you'll find that they've had something in their mind and they look at the feedback and they say, oh, I missed it completely. And yet they described it accurately.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really interesting that you bring that up, because yes, the idea of removing noun, using noun. And I've even seen that, as opposed to training through you, taking your classes on crviewer.com, which are amazing. I love them because it really is an at your pace program, where you can take a couple days. It's a lot to absorb, folks. Even if you go for a weekend, you walk out going, oh my God, I wish I could redo hour three from yesterday right now, you know?
Yeah.
And the idea that you can do that with your stuff, or you can go through, watch a video, go back, rewatch it. I think that that is hugely important.
That's one thing I do. A lot of teachers will have, you know, oh, you have a year, and after a year you have to, you know, and I'll, no, I know that life gets in the way.
Yeah. Well, and
I've had students that have been out for 10, 15 years. They call me and they say, well, I want to sign up again. And I said, hey, you're already signed up. Just come back and get to work.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. There have definitely been times where I've come back and rewatched videos and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's great to be able to do that because it really does change things. And once again, the idea of removing that noun from things, it's interesting because it really is. And we get into this with Michel Desrosiers, that it really is the idea, very Buddhist in its idea of like removing the ego. That's very removal of ego at that point.
Yeah.
Because you using the noun is you putting yourself and your definition on that viewing and on that object.
Oh, yeah.
And on those adjectives.
Yeah.
Like you're taking one and three and five and seven and this and that and saying that it means that, like it could mean something else.
But, you know, using nouns, our sentence structure is based on nouns and all that. We have an analogy that Og and Og were walking through the primeval forest and they heard a twig snap behind them. And Og turned around and said, what's that? Og, who used nouns, said, I mean, he didn't even look back. Saber-toothed tiger and took off running. We are the children of Og.
Yeah.
Og didn't make it that day. You
know? Yeah, yeah.
And since caveman days, we've been taught nouns, nouns, nouns. And along comes Ingo and says, don't do that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's just it. It really is an untraining of a lot of things.
Yeah.
You know, once again, just that idea of the idea of can't, the idea of this is not something that's possible. This is something that you have to be psychic to do. This is something you have to have mediumship ability to do. Like, absolutely not. We are all just very large antenna brains inside of a resonant chamber that we're always receiving data constantly.
Yeah.
And we only respond to about 10% of it.
Oh, I know. Everybody has some amount of intuition. And what Ingo created was a method to access whatever amount of intuition you have. And for most people, it's 100 times more than they think they have.
Absolutely. No, once again, when it happens, it is a beyond wow moment. You met my brother, Randy, this last year, just before the IRVA conference and at the IRVA conference and things like that. And he took a remote viewing class with Michelle Fried and Carl McClelland when they came here to Austin. And to see his moment live and in color, like at the table next to me, where he was like, holy shit.
Oh, dude.
Like, I'll use the words, man, because I've got goosebumps right now thinking about my first moment where it happened. And it was like, holy shit. Even the fact of how I've been holding him up on screen a lot lately, folks, but my silverware from the recent Cygames conference, where it's like, wow, it's amazing when it happens in front of your eyes. It's amazing when it happens from you, you know, because you've lost that moment. You've allowed yourself to literally become entangled in that moment. It's really beautiful.
When you see somebody else do it, you can ignore it. When it happens to you, you can't ignore it anymore.
Yeah.
You know? I was on a podcast and the guy said, well, you're special. And I said, no, I'm lucky. I got drawn into the unit that taught me this, taught me a thing that anybody can do. That means I'm not special. I'm just lucky.
Mm.
And what I want to show my students is that if there's anything special, they're special. That they can do things.
Absolutely. And that's just it. It's one of those, the example that I give, and I had to have this conversation this last year with my 8-year-old son in basketball.
Mm-hmm.
There were kids on his team that were not great. There were kids on his team that were really great.
Yeah.
Just, and hey, you know, depends on when you start bouncing a ball, number one. But there are also people that they may have picked up the ball at the exact same time as my son at 6.5. They are just naturally good at bouncing a ball.
Yeah.
They are naturally good at shooting a ball.
Yeah.
Michael Jordan, even though he's retired, still plays basketball every day. He still practices. Yeah. He said, you know, no different than hitting the gym. You're still doing cardio and leg day. You never skip leg day. You know, once you learn about leg day, you never skip leg day. So it's one of those, like, you're always practicing remote viewing. You're always sharpening things, dealing with, I'm sure even now at this point, Lynn, that there are even things that you work on regularly. So because you still want to work on them and hone them more.
Listen, this has been going for well over 70 years now and developing and developing. And I look at it, I database it and all that. And one of the things that is absolutely most evident is that we're in kindergarten. This is the human mind, and we haven't even scratched the surface. It's just phenomenal. I keep telling people, I'm not surprised by anything I see anymore, but I will never quit being amazed.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. And that's just it. You know, the fact of that wonder and awe will always remain because there's always something new in that kind of horizon whenever you're looking at things in that kind of way, Lynn. Mm-hmm. And once again, for somebody, I love our conversations on air because you, once again, are somebody who has been involved in this community for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
And since prior to it becoming public, and once again, I think it's interesting because there is within the communities of remote viewing and PSY, I think we have pretty good handle on definition of things. Even us making the distinction tonight of what we are talking about specifically is protocoled controlled remote viewing. The Ingo Swan method, the method used by, SRI, the military, Project Stargate, things like that. There are other methods, associative remote viewing, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see how the rest of the world views it, you know, and how they just see it as a source of mediumship.
We had a guy working on our yard and he said, I hear you do some kind of thing called remote viewing. And would you tell me about it? So I explained it to him in very simple detail. You know, how we sit down, we get a physical response to an inner thing and how we do the ideograms and how it goes step by step by step.
Yeah.
And after listening to all of that, he said, "Yeah, I saw a UFO once too."
All right.
All right.
Yeah. No, it is that's just it. That's just it. It's one that it's interesting to see it becoming more mainstream, more topic.
Yeah.
It's interesting to see the niche podcasts that have built up over the last few years around the Psy community and from the Psy community that have grown to great acclaim, things like that. But there are still numerous.
By the way, talking about the social media thing.
Yeah.
If you go to TikTok, YouTube, or I can't remember the third one.
Instagram.
Instagram. Thank you. And look up Inside Remote Viewing as a single word. I have over 100 short videos. I mean, generally 1 to 2 minutes that talk about each one of the aspects of remote viewing, inside remote viewing. Yeah. And there's one for 3 minutes, 20 seconds. But it talks about the different aspects of remote viewing, described, unidentified, what indirection is, secret brain hack, remote versus out of view body. And there's the first one up there on the list. If you go back up to the top of that,
displacement
is there mainly for, keep going up. Huh. Okay. It's different on your screen than it is on mine.
That's okay.
There's one that says, this is the secret hack for all remote viewers and all psychics and all that. And it was designed specifically for helping psychics who have not learned the remote viewing. It's a critical point in the remote viewing process. And the other ones all take up single topics of the remote viewing process and explain to you what they are.
Yeah.
So if anybody wants information, take a look at those. Yeah.
And man, you got tons of these, Lynn. I had no idea. I've known you for years, man. I had no idea that this was here. This is great. Yeah. What a fantastic, onboarding resource.
My son will come and interview me, and then he makes these short little things. He breaks it up into single aspects.
I love it.
And makes a video of it.
Yeah. I love it. And, you know, because it's one of those, man, I get a lot of comments. I get a lot of questions. I get a lot of people that pull me aside at things, stuff like that, and ask me questions, Lynn. I remember when I posted about Psy Games and about speaking at Psy Games, and it was my brother that cued me into it. I saw my brother. I woke up and I saw a comment on Facebook, saw an alert that was like, "Randy Jordan commented on your post." I was like, "Oh, well, what did my brother say?" And I went, and the only thing it said was, "These comments are gold." That was it.
You said what?
"These comments are gold."
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I mean, from the get, I had not seen or gotten any other alerts about comments on my post about buying tickets. And man, the things about from people that are like, "This is demonic. This is evil." Like all kinds of things where it was like, "Oh my God." Like it got thick, quick, and above any other community that I belong to. It's one of those, like, you could not get a more open-hearted, loving.
Yeah.
And like, they're not the, what this is about. whatsoever.
They're the closed-minded people too that make comments, you know, but the comments are golden. The comments come from people who are just experiencing this, and they make the comments. So if you're just coming into it, those comments are gold. They really are.
No. My favorite was the guy that was that gave me, it wasn't even a comment. It was just this huge post from the Book of Revelation.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh, wait a minute. Are you quoting John of Patmos, who may very well have remote viewed the end of days?
Yeah. Well, there are also like, those.
Thanks for making my point.
I was reading through the comments the other day on those TikTok videos, and one guy said, basically, you can't trust this guy, me. And you can't trust him because the shape of his nose proves that he believes in aliens. What?
Wow. You're deeper on TikTok than I am, buddy. Lynn, it is always great catching up with you. Always great talking. Always a pleasure. I know you have had a long, hard night tonight with class. You've been doing these amazing classes lately with Lori Williams. Before we let you go, let's let you definitely promote that. Let everybody know where they can go to be a part of that, where they can go to find out more about that. Because it's really just like a dial-in webinar. It's not even like a class. It's like a kind of what we've been doing tonight, where it's like, hey, ask questions.
Yeah, and Lori has a three-day weekend class that's free. You have to sign up for it. And it covers just the bare beginnings of stage one of the remote viewing process, but it's free. It's an introduction to remote viewing, and it's good. My students, when they graduate, and some of them have started teaching, and they're very good teachers. I have a list of them on my website, and they're good, but they teach classes, training and team training, trainers up at the very top.
Uh-huh.
And it goes into the trainers and gives their information, what they do, what they teach, how to get in touch with them.
That's great.
Where they are and all that. And, you know, we have them in Ireland, England, all through the States, Canada. Colleen Marinich up in Canada is a fantastic teacher. And we have Italy. So, and now we have teachers in Germany.
Oh, that's great.
So it's a way that you can schedule your own training according to your own scheduling and needs. It works.
That is fantastic. Lynn, as always, my friend, like I said, it's great catching up. Great talking with you. I'll be sharing links to the episode, all that kind of good stuff as soon as it goes out live from the website, everything else as always.
And remember, I do PK, right? If you're by this way and you don't stop, you're in trouble.
Oh, guaranteed, my friend, guaranteed.
Good. Okay, good.
All right. You take care of yourself, Lynn, all right?
You too. Thank you very much.
All right. Take care, man.
Bye-bye.
Always a pleasure chatting with Lynn Buchanan, everybody. He is an amazing individual, a beautiful human being, and quite literally one of the best controlled remote viewing trainers out there. His website, once again, crviewer.com. I cannot recommend his training courses enough. It is, if you're a busy individual like me, they're small. They're maybe 15-minute long videos. The last 5 minutes is the first 5 minutes is the last 5 minutes. They're so great and reinforced, Lynn. So thank you again, bud. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
While you are online, everybody, checking out everything from Lynn Buchanan and crviewer.com, make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com/knowledge is where you can access the Knowledge Vault. The declassified programs and documents section there is where we were pulling our copy of the CIA Project Stargate document that we were showing up on screen. If you'd like to see all kinds of documents like that, you can also find all of that on curiousresearch.org. Our archives are there as well as free tools where you can go and even file your own FOIA requests for such things and put your own evidence into things. When we come back from this quick commercial break, everybody, we will be joined by our good friend and guest, the Reverend Michael J.S. Carter. We will be talking about the intersection of faith and para experience, how para experiencers many times come to find faith after an experience, and many times how people of faith leave their faith after a para experience, and what this is about, what the phenomenology is about, and what it means. We'll be getting into that and so much more with Reverend Michael J.S. Carter right after this.
The key to good science is good research. At the heart of good research is a good data set. With the Field Observation and Encounter Log from Curious Research, you can easily keep track of your investigative information all in one place, making it easier to review cases and readily see comparisons and contrasts between them. Whether out in the woods squatching, in a back room gathering EVPs, or using high-tech gear to track UFO-UAP activity, this easy-to-carry, pocket-sized scientific data log is the perfect companion for any field researcher. You can find your copy of the Curious Research Field Observation and Encounter Log at Amazon.com or visit the official Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to reserve your copy for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is CuriousRealm.com/store.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back from that quick break. Thank you so much for staying with us. Also, thank you so much to our sponsors, especially True Hemp Science. If you are a user of CBD products like I am, folks, feel free to stop on by TrueHempScience.com today. Christopher Lynch and True Hemp Science use a spigeric process where every part of the hemp plant is used. Every part, that's seeds, that's stems, that's fibers, that's roots, that's buds, that's leaves. Every part is combusted, used, reused, and that process followed time and time again until an amazing spigeric product, complete with terpene profiles and all, is the result. Stop on by today. TrueHempScience.com is the website that you want to go to. Curious7 is the code that you want to use to save 7% off your entire cart of $50 or more and get free edibles on the way out the door. Our guest in this segment is the amazing Reverend Michael J.S. Carter. You can find him over at MichaelJSCarter.com. New blogs coming, all kinds of stuff. He is here today to join us in the conversation of para experience and faith. Welcome, welcome as always, Reverend. It's always great seeing you.
Always to see you. Always, always. Thank you for having me.
Same, same. Thank you for always coming on. It's always a pleasure seeing your face on the other side of my Zoom.
thank you.
Truly, this is a conversation that is near and dear to my heart. Because I am a believer's believer in a few different ways, Reverend. I've been a paranormal believer my whole life, things like that. But beyond that, like I am a former Catholic seminarian. I almost took the big dive and wore a collar for the rest of my life instead of having my wife and child.
Uh-huh.
It's one of those, a lot of people find these as conflicting things. And at the same time, a lot of people through paranormal experience come to faith, and a lot of people through paranormal experience leave their faith. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, that's a good point.
It's much like the crystal I hold in my hand every time I'm on air. It's a multifaceted conversation with this. As a reverend, let's start with faith to begin with. Where does faith alter from belief?
I think that, and that's a great question. For me personally, I think faith is a rung on the ladder to belief, because I'm equating belief with I know. It's not just that I believe it.
Yeah.
I know it's true. When I came in, here, I'll turn this light on. I know before, I don't have faith that it's going to come on. I know the light's going to come on. Okay. So that's where I would look at it. And I think that's where the gold is, because not only how do I know? Because I've experienced it. No one else has told me. Or someone else has told me about it, but I've experienced it. And some people would say that's the beginning of the difference between spirituality and religion. I don't know. It could be. I think that we could parcel that out. I don't necessarily believe that spirituality and faith are two different things. I know deeply people who are religious people, right? There's no conflict.
And I know deeply religious people that are not spiritual.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Amen. And so, but when I believe and I know, but I feel even without, you know, the UU, not the UU, the UFO aspect to this, even without that, the paranormal is always there. I was preparing for today, and I looked up the definition. Paranormal refers to events or experiences beyond the scope of scientific understanding. I would qualify that beyond our scientific, scope and understanding. And I think with UAPs, we are using 21st century science to maybe to try to decipher 30th century kind of, technology, or maybe more. But for example, there are ghosts, UFOs, ESP, telekinesis, clairvoyance, hauntings. Okay. Paranormal. Okay.
Yep.
But when, you know, you and I are educated, raised in Western culture, both seminary trained, I dare say you're probably more seminary trained.
Oh, I wouldn't say that whatsoever. Whatsoever. I spent a year in the seminary, Pastor.
10 years, brother. 10 years of that. And I got 3 years and I got out of there.
I spent many years afterward as a youth minister and taught CCE and church teaching RCIA, all kinds of things.
You are educated in that system.
So, but that is something that I will bring up on screen right now, and something that I have been having a very deep conversation with a lot of capital C Catholics that I know that are mm-hmm. hardline Catholic, very, like, one of them came to me, probably about 6 months ago, you know, whenever I share these things via, just so you know, folks who are friends with me on social media, if you ever get an episode, they share the, in a message, like, you're one of 500. Okay. It says, like, share with 500 people. So it randomly chooses 500 people. She was one of them. And this was for a guest that was, you know, talking about communicating with animal spirits. And she's like, I don't know why you would send this to me. This is nothing that I would ever be interested in. Animals don't have spirits. This is not how that works. You know, all kinds of things. And that's when I really, the apologist in me came forward, Reverend. And it's like, yes. But wait a minute. And I will bring up the Nicene Creed. And granted, it's slightly changed now with you know, new church, all kinds of things. But this is sure. what it's been since Vatican II. And it was partially changed from Vatican I that's been around since the Council of Nicaea. Things like that from the Apostles' Creed. But sure. here it is. The opening salvo. I believe in God, the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth, of all things visible and invisible. So
there it is.
Like that is the first pillar of faith. The first one.
That's paranormal.
paranormal. Like by definition, you believe in the paranormal.
That's paranormal. And so in preparation, you know, I just pulled out a couple things, you know, in Mark 5:1-20, Jesus heals a demon possessed man. Okay. In 1 Samuel 28, chapters 7-20, King Saul summons through a medium, a channeler, summons Samuel back from the dead to talk to him. Okay. So now we have a couple things. We have a medium, we have life after death, we have being able to contact life after death.
Yep.
And so talking about the future. And then in Luke 4, and the whole Bible is full of this. And I'm only focusing on the Bible because we're both Western trained. We can go to other sacred writings if you want.
Oh,
Luke
sure.
4:8-30. There's a crowd that's angry with Jesus and they want to throw him off a cliff. But for some reason, he is able to walk past them in the midst of them and nothing happens to him. Was he invisible? Was there some type of force field? But it says he walks through the midst of them and he goes out unharmed. What are we to make for those who don't believe in the paranormal? Hmm. What are we to make of those? Now, coming from a liberal tradition that I'm in now, we would use it metaphorically if we would even deal with it at all. Well, that's not what they meant. But I think that's hubris. I think that we have to assume that people are writing what they saw.
Yeah.
You know? And so we have a channeler, a medium, conjuring a spirit of a dead person, one of the most famous prophets of the Bible, Samuel. We have Jesus healing. Now, we could argue maybe the man had epilepsy. Okay, but he still touches this person. I don't even remember if he touched him, but he told the spirit to leave. And the spirit left. That's how do you explain that? And then again, yeah. Luke, you know, they're going to throw him off a cliff. Okay, so whatever he said, it triggered a lot of people. And it just says he walked through the midst of them unharmed. What are we to make of those? And so as people of faith, do we just pick and choose? I mean, I get it. I forget the book in the Bible where a donkey is actually speaking. Okay. And this is way before the television show, Mr. Ed.
Yep.
Okay. So, okay. I get it. We could perhaps argue that, but these other events that we're being told of, without paranormal explanation, do we just write them off? It's not true that the biblical writers had an overactive imagination. Our faith tradition is built. There it is, Balaam's donkey.
I'm quick.
There you go, Mr. Ed, in Numbers 22. So, what do we do with these? This one is easier to dismiss just because it's so absurd. But maybe there was some type of telepathy. Maybe he's a donkey whisperer. I don't know. However, the Christian tradition, at least, and I would argue Muslim and Judaism, is based on paranormal events.
Yeah.
Be happening almost as every day, you know, but I can see the downside of it as well.
In Catholicism, it literally is happening every day because you're talking about the miracle of the Eucharist and transubstantiation, which happens every hour on the hour across the globe. And that is once again a pillar of faith.
Yes, yes. It's a metaphysical event that, and faith and that are intertwined.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay? Intertwined. You cannot do one without the other.
Well, and you know, it's interesting because that's a statement I say on the show regularly that our good friend, rest his soul, Earl Grey used to say was, no, I don't believe in UFOs. Belief implies faith. I know they exist.
I know. Yes.
I know
yes.
they exist. Like, I have experienced it. I've seen them.
Yes.
I've seen yes. evidence toward them and toward other things. So I don't have to have faith.
No, I don't have to have faith.
Believe that they exist. I know they exist.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I don't, I have seen my God work in my life. I've seen these things happen.
I don't have to have faith in it. I don't believe yeah. that they can happen. I know that they can happen. And so when, and so when we encounter in a more secular era, a generation that we live in, there's always going to be that tension. You know, do people get up out of tombs after being dead for 3 days? Do people, you know, survive Roman crosses? And we know they do. Josephus says, and he's not talking about any type of woo-woo. He, you know, there were people who, unfortunately, or fortunately for them, they survived. So, but it's faith is such a bedrock of religion that it's like hope. If you take that away, what's left? What is left? And that's why you find so many people looking for a direct experience with God, whatever that means to whoever's listening. I want a direct experience. I don't want what Michael said. I don't want what Chris said. They're guiding, but I want to know it myself. And they're finding, it's ironic. I can't get that in a church. Can't get it in a church.
Well,
and that's why people are giving. No, I'm not saying they can't, but they feel they can't.
Yeah.
They feel because of various things, hypocrisy, love of money, greed.
Well, the barrier of the can't to begin with. I just bent these at a conference all of a few weeks ago. Reverend, like I told you before the show, I'm about to have surgery on my hands. I can barely hold a mouse, but I was able to bend silverware because I no longer had the concept of can't.
Yeah.
I lost the concept of that not being possible.
And that makes you a dangerous individual.
In all technical religious circles, yes, because at that point you're breaking the paradigm of control. You're breaking the paradigm of the person that is the conduit to the divine. At that point, you are the conduit to your own divine.
Yes. That's right. And that's a no-no. And so to keep you in faith and not and staying within those confines is what the church has been doing. I'm talking about any church, not just the Catholic.
Yeah, that's right.
For over 2,000 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's why Jesus overturned tables, man. And he wasn't Catholic or Christian.
No, no. And he was saying that you know, you've made my Father's house, you know, you've commercialized it.
Yeah.
But that's that he was angry at the hypocrisy of the religious leaders of his day. Of course, it was the political leaders as well.
Yeah.
But and that's what and they also found him to be anathema because he was saying, you don't really need these Sadducees. Don't need them.
Yeah.
You have an inner teacher. I can show you how to get there. My Father can show you how to get there. That is dangerous. I think part of the UFO disclosure mechanism, for lack of a better word, doesn't want to deal with the religious questions right now.
Well,
because it's messy. But also eventually you peel it back and you're going to get to what you just to where you just got. And then the whole card, the whole because religion has been used to control. I'm not saying religion is inherently bad. I think we have a natural propensity toward the religious to bind together, to yoke, which is what the word means. But powers that be don't want that because you're putting everybody out of business.
Yeah.
Because you don't need the rabbi. You don't need the imam. You don't need the priest. You can connect. The kingdom, queendom, whatever you want to call it, is within you. And that's why his teachings have been so, this is a perfect.
This is the conversation we're talking about. Like, yes, literally, it is unfolding in front of us, Reverend.
Yes, yes. Because Brother J.D. Vance, Mr. Vance, I don't know whether he really believes some of the things that comes out of his mouth, but they're demons, okay? Because if they're demons, that means you need to fear them, and we can protect you and we can control you. Don't get into it.
Yeah.
Don't start dealing with this. Let me tell you, stay away from them. Let Daddy tell you, they're demons. Stay away from those people. Because they'll lose control. Let me share something with you, and I just want you to tell me what you feel.
Please, about please. This.
Three projects in the past year have contacted me. They've contacted me. We know you're a reverend. We know you're this. You're ordained, you have a church, but you're an experiencer. We want to talk about that and put it out there. Documentary and, of course, Ancient Aliens. Okay. The first project, I fly out to Roswell. I'm out there for a day and a half, 2 days, 3-hour interview. And, I'm like, wow, they're really going to do this. I wind up seeing the show. Now, they did change it. They went in a different direction. I think I was on for 8 seconds talking about something. The show's not on. It's on the Travel Channel. Then my old stomping ground, so I'm still Ancient Aliens, they call. And we did a whole thing. I couldn't believe it because they didn't know I was an experiencer.
Yeah.
I thought they did, but they didn't know. But they decided to go in a different direction. This is recent. I just got a call from a guy about 6 weeks ago, wanted to talk about my experiences and the healing I had. I had to get papers from my doctor to verify that I had the blood clot, those kinds of things. Went through all that rigmarole, talked to me for 2 hours, and then ghosted me. I called him. I texted him. I said, are you going in a different direction? What's going on? Yeah. I haven't heard from you in 2 weeks. Oh, no, we're going to get back to you. We're going to get back to you. Never heard from him. My feeling, before I want to hear what you have to say, is that whoever is controlling, whoever's above them, not a conspiracy, no.
No.
But they're saying, we're not ready for that right now. That's how I'm taking it. Now, of course, there's some sour grapes. You made me jump through these hoops. One person wanted to call my ex-wife, who I mentioned in one of the books I wrote about the experiences. I'm going through all these hoops for you, and then you don't even call me back to say, we don't want to do it now or whatever.
Well, the project's taken a turn.
Yeah. So your
projects take turns. That's how that works.
So is that what you think that was 3 times in a row? Because I'm thinking there's something about this topic that somebody is saying, we're not ready for that right now. What do you think?
In your
opinion?
When it comes to, and we've had this conversation on the show before, the whole idea whenever the orbs were happening all over the country and the drones and everything else. And it was, you know, orbs of light, orbs of darkness. These are angels. These are demons. Okay. Like it became the immediate conversation, Reverend. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we had the whole conversation about Project Bluebeam. And don't forget that if it's not an alien invasion, it's a fake second coming. So
yes,
like
yes.
You're playing into their hands with your own paradigm.
Yes. Yes.
I think that's part of the equation is that, to bring up I think a lot of people don't like to bring up the angel demon concept when it comes to UFOs, number one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's
at play there because here I am an ordained minister. I'm seminary trained, you know, I got my master's degree, I have a church, I'm an experiencer.
Well, I think it's the fact of while the topic is hot on aliens, disclosure, everything else, even though you see things like House of David, things like that being produced, folks, don't get me wrong. There are the Chosen. There have been tons of shows literally within the last year and a half.
Yeah. I've seen them.
That have hit streaming for streaming, but good money, good audiences, things like that. But it's a very niche audience that you're talking about. It's not necessarily made for the entire general public, nor is the entire general public going to be interested in that. The entire general public is coming a little more interested in UFOs, UAPs, disclosure, things like that. Like the Bob Lazar documentary is a prime example. S4 just hit and I watched it like not charting. Then it became number 5. Then it became number 3. And it's been at number 1 on Amazon for like the last few weeks.
Wow.
It's been great
I'm
to
not
see
surprised.
It. It's been
you
great.
You got Spielberg's movies coming
out. But it's up against that kind of stuff. And that's the thing. Now if suddenly Bob Lazar in the middle of that started talking about how in the research it became about angels and demons and religion and everything else, that's a different lean at that
so
point.
So you agree with me though.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Now, no, it's definitely like by the money deciders at the studio. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Yes. Like, oh yes. No. I see where you're going and that's cool. But if we can trim this fat of it being religious and come over here, we'll have a much better product as opposed to getting into the topic. And Joseph Jordan is a great guy. Like I want to talk to him about going and speaking at his conference. He does a whole, and you should too, actually, about coming and speaking because he does an adjunct conference in Roswell.
I don't know him.
Really great guy. I'll handshake you with him. But his is the fact of these are demonic entities that these, and granted that, you know, I'm not saying all experiences are. He may be saying that some of the, that most of them are guised as that. That is what you've interacted with. And it's a concept that you have to be willing to entreat. It's a concept that you have to be willing to talk about. Cause if you don't talk about it, much like the Catholic Church has reorganized the school of exorcism since 2012. Yes.
And
I want to say a few hundred exorcists enrolled now. Like it went from 20 or 30 to a few hundred to the point that there's now, I believe, a school of exorcism here in the United States. That's the thing is if that's what you're putting out there, you'd think you'd have a little bit more boots on the ground to handle that. You know, to handle that, quote, battle with darkness that's happening, if that's the case.
Yeah. And I just wanted to get your spin on that.
No, absolutely.
I just think that there's more. I think that there's an agenda of fear that is going to have to keep, you know, because I would go on there and say just the opposite.
Yeah, same.
And that's not the message that folks want to hear.
I want you to find me an instance in the Bible or anywhere where when the angel appeared, and I mean the one sent by God, that they didn't tremble in fear, or that they the experience didn't have to be told. Oh, whoa, hold on, man. Afraid. Calm down. It's all cool. Yes. It's all cool.
Yes. 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 Yes.
I'm not here to annihilate your town. That's the other dude. That's not me.
That's right. That's somebody else. And so, but it's interesting. But then again, bringing it back to our topic.
Yeah.
Is that, and thank you for indulging me.
Oh, no, no.
Is that the paranormal that is there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Without the UFO motif, we are basing our faith traditions on supernatural events that cannot be explained. But if I said, and I'm not talking about just me, if I said this happened to me, I would be medicated and possibly, I'd be locked up and possibly medicated. But this is what our, at least in the West, this is what our religions have been founded on. They have been founded on this. And all we're saying is that if we follow that tradition, why is it okay to believe that it happened 2,500, 5,000, 6,000 years ago, but we can't say it's happened now?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. You mentioned the word angels. Angels, okay. What is it? Malachim in Hebrew, Angelos in Greek. It's an interesting word because, first of all, nowhere in the Bible are we told they have wings.
Yep.
You know, nowhere. I'm not saying for listeners out there, I'm not saying they don't. I'm just saying nowhere is it mentioned in the Bible. I feel like our ancestors were saying these beings could fly. But the word angel doesn't tell you, it tells you what their role is, but it doesn't tell you where they're from. It tells you they could be an envoy, diplomat, judges. They could do legal interpretation. They could do all of those things. But that doesn't tell you where they're from. It just tells you their role. We know that they're, in many cases, they're enough like us that, yes, you can have in vitro fertilization because of technology. I'm not saying that's out of the question, but they're enough like us, if you read the Book of Enoch and you go Genesis 6, that they can mate with Earth women.
Yeah.
But they're different enough from us that you can be blown away by their physical and intellectual prowess.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, as we but talk we can about. Believe them. Yeah. Yeah. And the Nathaniel
That's
Gillis.
What I would have asked J.D. Vance.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, exactly. And you know, when you start looking at the work of people like our good friend Nathaniel Gillis with Necronetics. And the idea that, yes, much like you said in the Book of Enoch, where these things are mated with human, that there seems to be a breed of these entities that are using a type of magical technology, like sigil magic, like what was bestowed onto Solomon to control the angels and demons and nature and all kinds of things that are literally using that technology to copulate and carry themselves over as a new spirit inside of a human vessel, and progenerate and carry on not only a bloodline of these things, but to, transfer their consciousness into them. So like this is all very spiritual warfare stuff, but when you peel it back and look at it from another facet, once again, you're talking about alien breeding programs and cross DNA and that kind of thing.
Hybridization, that's what we're talking.
Yeah.
And so and even it's so layered that you always have to to walk gently because you don't want to paint all of them with the same brush.
Yes. Yes. And you know? That's just it. And I will not jump down the rabbit hole of Dr. Stephen Greer's thinking, which is right. They are all good. Every single one of them has every single one of them has our best interest at heart. And I cannot jump down the rabbit hole of thinking that every single one of them is here to harvest us and here to use us as a shell by which to enjoy the tactility of this world that they can't enjoy or what have you, in that kind of possessive spirit kind of way.
Agree. And which brings us to, I don't think it's a paranormal gift, but the cultivation with faith comes not automatically, discernment.
Yeah.
How do I discern who means me harm and who means me well? Or do I just have faith that I will be protected no matter what? You see?
Yeah. Yeah.
So now it's another layer. You can't just go around and call, you know, we're not in medieval times. Everybody's a demon. The only thing about that statement is at least he's saying UFOs are real.
Yeah.
He didn't say they weren't real.
Yeah, he didn't say they weren't real.
That they're demons. But he didn't
say that. That's right. He didn't deny them.
Okay? He didn't deny. So there you go. And we can unpack the other.
That is a proper pastor to see the silver lining.
But they do exist. Well, because we know they do. You know, the train has left the station. And so but we're still in that you know what? It's like I can't let go of the control because I can rule by fear. Mm. You know, even if he had said, well, some of them, I believe, are demonic and some of them have probably assisted humanity in some way, shape or form. I don't know that, but I would assume that even if he had a more balanced view. But I got to put out that they're demons because they want us to keep being in that fear mode. Fear this, fear that, fear this. Oh, there's fear there. Look out. Watch out. Don't let him get you.
Well,
fear.
He that informs you of the danger surely has the solution. That's the logic there.
Isn't it the Hegel dialect?
The Hegelian dialectic.
There's synthesis and then antithesis. And
it's funny that you bring that up because I got a dirty secret, folks, used to work with Alex Jones many years ago, but that is the shtick of him on air. And don't get me wrong. If you remove the last two parts of the equation, his show is he takes stacks of news and he reads them.
Oh, I'm sure.
And he like actual news. I used to find the stacks and divide them and highlight the juice, you know, so like that news is out there. No doubt. Mm-hmm. You take that news, you extrapolate it through the lens of history.
Yeah.
And start breaking it down and how it's happened before and everything else. Now comes the magnifying glass where you show that it's happening now.
Yeah.
And that's where the fear is injected. That's where the cortisol injection happens. And then as the cortisol hits the maximum point, let's go to commercial break and we're going to sell you the solution to the fear that you just had.
Yeah. Yeah.
Buy some methylene blue. Buy some colloidal silver. Like
that's what he's doing.
That's what that is. Doing. That's what that
that's
is.
Exactly and it, you know, it, it, and no, it works.
No offense. It works. It works great from a pulpit. It works great from a podium in legislation. It works great in all kinds of places where you are trying to control via fear in that kind of way.
And that's what that is. That's exactly what that is. But I think a lot of people are, how can I say? I think a lot of people
are afraid and rightfully so in a lot of ways, Reverend, truly. Yeah.
And no, they are. And a lot of people are waking up from that fear that I'm being manipulated.
Yeah.
I'm being manipulated. So, and see, that's the danger point, because I'm waking up. I'm not having faith in government. I'm not having faith in the church. I'm going to go to by what I experience. They may say this. I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what any experiencer is saying for the most part, especially if it goes contrary to the party line. But that's what any person of faith is saying in a secular age, that I don't care what the majority of people are saying science is. Science is possibly another God. Just follow the money and then you'll see where science is going. But, you know, and I'm not anti-science. I'm talking
about
science becomes a tool that, you know, but I will say that the goal is to go beyond faith to I know.
Yeah.
Because I experienced it.
Absolutely.
I experienced it. And whether it's paranormal or whether it's rational or material, I have experienced this, and that's valid. You know, and I think in a world where we're being manipulated and controlled, we're questioning reality, what is real? Because whoever can control what your reality controls you.
Yep.
I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've been on social media or even looking in a book. Is this real? Is this AI? You know, so the seed of doubt is planted, and then you have somebody to come along and say, "Oh no, that's fake. We'll tell you what's good. We'll tell you what news is real and what isn't. We'll tell you what pictures are real and what isn't.
Yeah.
We'll tell you if this is Project Blue Book or whatever it is." And so now, okay, I trust you. So now I've given all my faith away. I've given everything away, and that is the danger that we live in today. I heard someone say the other day that this war we're fighting, yes, it's about oil and hegemony, and you know, that's always about that, but it's also about, it's about consciousness. It's about, this is war over the consciousness of this planet, because whoever can control what is reality controls the whole planet. And that's worth more than any oil. People will give you their oil. People will give you whatever it is if you can control what they think is real.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and that's just it. Once again, being the person with the solution, being the person with the answer. Despite the fact of maybe being the person that, you know, helped stoke the hysteria or helped, you know, cause the issue or profundity.
Yeah, Hegel, he was right. He was right. It's Machiavellian, but it works.
Yeah.
I cause the problem. I tell you what the problem is. And then I have a solution to the problem. Meanwhile, I started in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. And even whenever you look at the coming disclosure, July 8th, which, you know, oddly, the same day that they announced that there was a disc shot down in Roswell, July 8th. So, mm-hmm.
Is that a coincidence? No.
Yeah. Yeah.
Come on. Yeah. To you and I, it's not a coincidence. It's not a coincidence.
But the fact that there is, yes, a presidential call to declassify everything that can be declassified, and that everybody's like, yes, we're behind this. We're going to get all the information together. Then Representative Luna is like, give me these 46 videos. And they're like, absolutely, we'll make that happen. And it just doesn't happen. Like, still the exact same thing. Still the exact same quagmire that we were in before. And if you want faith in something within the UFO UAP community, you can have faith in that. Hold your faith in that. That will be the continuance.
I got a bridge for you. And it's very cheap. Here in North Carolina.
Yeah.
But again, going back to that, and to faith in the paranormal.
Yeah.
But we have to be careful. We touch on this because faith can be magical thinking.
Yeah.
You see? And so, and I don't mean in some governmental conspiratorial way. I've seen people as a chaplain, and I get it. I've seen miraculous healings occur.
Amen.
I have been involved in some. But there are times when, no, this person is dying, and they're going to die. They're going to leave their body soon. And you can have this faith that can blind you to what's actually happened. I've had on a couple of occasions, dying people say, "Can you talk to my family? I'm tired. I want to go." And this is a family of faith. And they're like, "We're going to do everything to keep them alive." And no. It doesn't mean you have less faith if they die. It doesn't mean you weren't faithful. It just means that it's this person's time. So we see this magical thinking.
Yeah.
That if I only have enough faith, whatever I want to happen will happen. And life doesn't work like that. But it's all done in the name of faith. I have the faith.
Mm.
I have faith.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, I have faith in a lot of things. Like I have faith in my fellow man. I have faith in humanity. I have faith that we as a humanity will find our way to these things, and that we will strive for common ground. That above all else, that's what all of us want, is that Maslow's hierarchy. You know, needs. Of needs. Yeah. Like we all share these needs. Doesn't matter where, like if you were brought up in Borneo or New York or like, you know,
or Bethlehem. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. We all share those needs. And when you're talking about faith in that kind of way, when you're talking about, once again, faith in the paranormal, things that happen that are beyond reason. Even the fact of fear, Reverend, like as an anxiety sufferer, I try to explain it to people because they're like, "You're a logical guy." And I'm like, "Yes, I'm more than logical. Like I'm very logical."
Yes.
If I could logically make sense of my anxiety, it wouldn't exist.
It wouldn't exist.
But,
yes.
But my anxiety in and of itself by nature is illogical. It's a fear. It's a fear response.
Okay.
You know,
but there's such a thing as and you go back to Camus and Heidegger to a way, but there's an existential anxiety that we all live with because we know we're finite.
Sure.
And I'm not trying to let you off the hook or whatever. No. You know. But that's what the existentialist talked about. When you see the absurdity of life. And you go, well, okay, now you and I as people of faith, we don't go, "Oh, it's all for nothing."
What's the point?
But we do say when we see things that are going on in our country, in our households, geopolitically, of course I'm anxious. Being human makes you anxious because you know you won't be human too long because you got to die.
Yeah.
You know, I will say this, and to end, I know we're getting close, but
that's okay.
And we don't have to end. I got time.
Oh, no.
So I'm just saying. I'm just thinking. I'm older than you, okay? And I'm not wearing that as a badge, but
it's okay.
It occurred to me, the world that I'm trying to build along with you and others, you know, a world more fair, more mercy, more equitable. It's a world that I'm building, but I may not be able to live in it.
Yeah.
But I need to build it.
Yep.
And I say that because I think about, I'm writing a sermon soon on Eastern thoughts for the Western mind.
Oh, beautiful.
And it's about, you know, of course, you know, about the being in the now, in the present, and that kind of thing. But in Western thought, we have that contemplative tradition in Christianity. You just have to dig for it. But, you know, I, for me, a lot of the anxiety, I have children, you have children. What are they going to be left? Are we going to blow ourselves up and what have you? I can't control that. But once I get into, and I get frustrated because that's the world I want to live in too.
Yeah.
And in some ways I do, where there's fairness and equitable transactions between human beings. But this is the world I'm going to build. But I just have to be able to realize that I may not be here to live in it, but I need to do it anyway. And when I do that, my anxiety goes down when I say that, when I let it in, because it's like I'm resolved to it.
Yep.
Who was it? Tagore, the person who plants a tree, I'm paraphrasing, knowing that they probably won't live to see it bloom, begins to understand the meaning of life.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's just it. And when you start looking at, once again, just to, in the last 10, 15 minutes here, bring this full circle. Yeah. When you start looking at faith in the paranormal, I am no longer a practicing Catholic. I'm not there every Sunday. I don't do Knights of Columbus like I used to, things like that. But I have my faith. Yeah. I have my belief. I talk to my God. I teach my son to talk to his God, to understand that in the way that he needs to understand that. And the fact that we all experience things in a different way. And, you know, the fact that, and I'll bring it up again on screen. I bring it up regularly, but the scientific method, like, this stands for faith. No different. You know, and to the point that I always say, the day that science doesn't follow that repetitive method and you stop the question at the very beginning, it's dogma.
Yes.
It's dogma now. It's static. You're no longer testing and prodding. And it's no different than any good pastor says your faith should be tested daily. You should be.
Yeah.
You should
be fresh.
Yeah.
It gets stale. And people are thinking something. They're seeking something fresh.
Yeah.
And I think that if the church, now there are other rationalist theologians who would argue, Michael, we know that donkeys don't talk. We know that people don't from the dead. We know that. And so, yeah.
I don't know. We have people come back from the dead regularly. We bring them back.
Yeah. But I think that what people want is the experience for themselves.
Yeah.
And as church leaders, as healers, as theologians, we need to be able to guide. Now, you can't lead where you haven't been. So if you don't believe in it, you probably don't want to get into this part of ministry. But we need to be able to show people how you can get in touch with that. And for some, it might be going out in nature.
Yeah.
For some, it may be the contemplative life. For some, I may need the scriptures. For some, there are many ways to get there, because I want your faith to become belief, and I want it to become knowledge.
Yeah.
Because it's your experience. And I could be, you could be a mailman across the street delivering the mail. I'm a minister, but your spiritual experience is just as valid as mine, because it's just that. It's your experience.
Yeah.
And that's where your faith, belief, whatever you want to call it, comes from. And there may be things that I can't explain. And that doesn't mean it's not true. I just can't explain it. But it means something to you, and it's grounded on it. But I think for those people who, there's just no way to be authentic saying that, you know, the whole Western culture is built on the Christianity, the Judaism,
yes,
the Islam, and it's all built on paranormal activity around these individuals.
Well, and that's just it. Once again, the idea that if you exclude paranormal, if you get rid of that, where are most faiths as we know them?
Well,
you know, as far as major world religion.
Well, I have Jefferson's Bible in my office because at one point he identified or he was part of Unitarianism.
Yes.
And he took out all of the miracle stories of the New Testament. I have no desire to read that. It's there in my office.
Yep.
But what would you be without it? I'm a big fan of the late John Shelby Spong, but he was a rationalist, brilliant. And he tried to explain away all the miracle stories. I didn't like that, but I loved his mind. And he was saying the church has to come into the 21st century. I think you can still do that, especially with the UFO reality. But even without it, you don't have to take out those miracle stories.
Well, I mean, that brings up that is a massive existential point, though, is the idea of can you believe and have your faith without the miracle? Can you do?
Well,
is that possible?
Jesus says, when they were asking him, I think it was in Matthew, give us a sign. Give us a sign of the end of the age. And he says, only an evil and adulterous generation needs to seek a sign. Okay? Yeah. That's one instance. Herod wanted him to do miracles when he was on trial before him. There was another instance. And he said, but you've seen these things and you believe. Blessed are those who haven't seen what you've seen.
Yeah.
And they still. So according to him, you can.
Yeah.
You don't have. Look, I didn't see him walk on water, but I'm not going to tell you that he didn't.
Well, that brings up the whole.
But my whole faith is not wrapped around he walked on water. Yeah. It was the life he lived. And that's what I'm talking about. And I think if we spent more time following him instead of worshiping him, we'd have a better experience.
Well, no. I firmly concur with that because it is the idea of, once again, the faith of a child. Come unto me as a child. A child doesn't have the preconceived notion of can't. To loop this once again, full conversation loop around. A child does not have the preconceived notion of can't. A child does not have the preconceived notion of hate or somebody being worth less than them or to be treated differently. These are all things that you must imbue into a child.
So I would say to you, to your query, that you can have the religions without the miracle. But then we go back to what Einstein said, because everything's a miracle. But we go back to, what is the miracle? The miracle that I got up this morning. The miracle that we're seeing, that we just see the miracle of nature, how we just came out of winter. Now, down here, we got a winter for a couple of days, and then we're going to go back. But there's miracles all around you if we had ears and eyes to see it. So it depends. It doesn't always have to be the burning bush, the grandiose. He walked on water. You know, it doesn't have to be that. It could be just how we interact with it. So, yes, we can have faith without the miracle, because everything's a miracle. Einstein said there's only two ways to live. As if nothing is a miracle, or as if everything is a miracle.
Yeah. Yeah. And as we talk about so many things on this show, Reverend.
I know we go.
It's about alignment. It's about alignment. It's about vibration. It's about the fact of, yes, you can shift things, but what you're probably not going to be able to do is, in a Superman way, fly around the world in reverse time. Your change will take time.
Yes.
These things. And once again, you may not see the fruit of your labor ever. I've over my many, many years of youth ministry, and I mean a good decade of my life out of 50 spent in youth ministry, teaching CCE, confirmation, all kinds of things. I was asked to be confirmation sponsored by who knows how many kids along the way, all kinds of things. There was one that recognized my name years later. It was on my way to my fourth degree initiation for the Knights of Columbus. We were on a bus from the church to the reception. And I'm just casually talking to a brother next to me. You know, what parish are you from? I'm like, St. John Vianney, west side of town. You know, we got to talking for a minute and suddenly I hear this voice. Excuse me, did you just say your name was Chris Jordan from St. John Vianney? I was like, yeah. He was like, I had you in seventh grade for confirmation and for senior year in CCE. And I want you to know that the things that you taught me outside of that book that my friends had to read every week changed my life. And I am here right now because of that.
That's a miracle.
The chances of that ever happening. The fact that I got to hear it in my life is pretty incredible. Yes. I did none of that for that moment. I did none of that for that. And you even gave me the advice years ago that I lean on regularly, Reverend, that this is my mission in that kind of way. This is my teaching in that kind of way.
It's clearly to me. I mean, Ray Charles can see it.
Yeah, and it's one of those, like, that gives me mission in a different way with this show.
I think that's what we have to do.
You do.
I didn't mean to cut off. We have to expand what religion means. Let's expand what faith means. Let's expand what ministry means.
Yeah.
Let's grow, evolve, and it's rather shrinking, and, well, he's not doing it this way or that way.
Yeah, yeah, no, exactly, because, I don't know of anybody not walking around with a plank in their eye, much less half a tree. So it's one of those, if you do have that open heart, if you do have that open mind, like we say at the end of the show all the time, you know, that's what's necessary. That's what, melts the icy heart. That's what softens the stony heart, is that point of understanding.
That's it. You roll away that stone, and then everything. I was thinking before the show, when I had to go to the doctor this morning, and back in the day, people would say, "I'll believe it when I see it." But now we know, because of quantum, and that no, that doesn't work that way. If you believe it,
you will see it.
And that's a whole paradigm shift.
It is. It really is. Yeah. It truly is.
Yeah. And that's the miracle.
Yeah. Amen.
You know?
Yeah.
And so who was it? Wordsworth that said in the universe, what? There are things that are known and unknown. And in between, there are doors. I don't know if it was Wordsworth, but Yeah, it was, there are things that are known and unknown in the universe, and in between, there are doors. And if you go through those doors, have the faith, the belief, the trust to go through that door,
the whole world can be different.
There you go. And we hear about what Socrates, the unexamined life is not worth living. Since we talked about a number of things, but faith and paranormal, the unexamined faith is not worth having.
Yeah.
So you have to go with, if I believe the same thing at 69 that I believed at 29, I've wasted several decades of my life.
Yep.
Okay. And so that's not what you want. That's not what you want. And so faith, the trust, the belief that I will be guided, I will be taken to places I need to be, know things that I need to know, with or without what we call the paranormal, because what we call the paranormal may just be laws of life and physics we just don't understand yet.
Sure. But and once again, that idea of discernment.
Yes.
That only comes with time. That only comes with time, only comes from experience.
I'm being burnt.
You know? No. And that's burnt. Exactly what I was going to bring up, was the idea of AI, falsities, all that kind of thing. They are rampant. They are rampant. But, hey, you can't let that destroy your faith in what's happened. And, B, you can't let that rule the day as far as just accepting it and swallowing it as truth without discerning it.
Test all spirits.
Yeah.
Test them all. We're told that in scripture. Test them all.
Yep.
To see if they are who they say they are.
Yeah.
And, you know, and sometimes you get burned, but mistakes are our best teachers. So it's just nothing wrong if you make a mistake. And we've done that. And we've probably got more to do. One of the things that fascinates me so much about faith and religion and spirituality, especially in the context of the UAP thing, which, you know, is that some of these beings have mastered that. That they have the technological prowess and the scientific prowess, and they also have the open heart. So they're not two separate things. There was something on Facebook I looked at. It was old. It was black and white. The teacher had a shag haircut, so it must have been like 80s or 90s. And he said something that I thought was so profound. And when we get off of this, if I can find it, I'll send it to you. I think I kept it. Whoever was in the audience, you know, it's like he was writing on a whiteboard. And he said, you can be in awe of their technology. You can be in awe that they can walk through walls. You can be in awe of all that, but never be in awe of their souls, because their souls are no better and no worse than yours.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I heard that, I had to play it again. Say that again. And he just brought it down. Yeah, you can be in awe. And we need that, because that's how you get okey-doked. That's how you get flim-flam. Because you start worshiping the technology, having faith in the technology,
yep,
instead of whatever it is you say you believe in. But I thought it was just so wonderful he was telling them that. Don't be in awe of anything else, because they're no better than you.
Yeah.
On a soul level.
Yep. Yeah. Truth. Truth. And with that, Reverend, before we let you go, what advice would you give to the experiencer that may be struggling with faith right now? And what advice would you give to those of faith who may be afraid of experience?
Great question. First of all, I'm always around if you want to talk. Put that out there. But I will say this, your whole struggle, my whole struggle, if we take that book seriously, because the Bible is nothing if not a book of people who are experiencers trying to hold on to faith. That's what that book is. Prose, beauty, poetry, wisdom, but these people are experiencers, Old and New Testament, and they're struggling to hold on to faith. Don't be afraid. Try not to be afraid, because once you say, I live in a populated universe, you have to look at God differently, because you're saying that there's more to it than what I was taught, than what I know. But that book, that book is, those stories are about people struggling with what they believe. They were sharing the planet with another intelligence. Some they understood, some they didn't. Faith is not always supposed to feel good. There's supposed to be struggle. Because if it's not struggle, it's not worth having. And when you come out the other end, you'll say, oh, I don't have faith. I know. Because I've been through it. Not what my mama told me, not what my daddy told me, not what the minister told me. This is mine. That's what I would say.
Yeah. And beautifully said. Beautifully said. Reverend, it's always great. Always. What about those who of faith that may be afraid of experience and of having an experience?
You know, Yeah. Well, that's what I say, because those folks in the book, they had the experience. The angel said, don't be afraid. Easy to say, you know, but they were having those experiences. They were having experiences with non-human intelligences. And I want to be clear. I am definitely not saying that God is an astronaut. I never said that.
Nope.
Ever believed. But those stories, how do I know? How do I discern? Is Yahweh, you know, he's got a bad temper. He carries on. Is this who I really want to work with? Or there are others. And then Jesus comes along thousands of years later and says, well, let me tell you about my father. My father is coming from another perspective, right?
Yeah.
My father is non-human, but I'm human, which you could argue I'm not human, but guess what? My father is also your father. So they're interweaving these experiences. And they any new experience can be troubling. And I had it, and I had probably will have it again. But I didn't turn out too bad, and I don't think you would either.
Yeah.
Live your faith. Live your life, but don't be afraid. Try not to be. If you get afraid, it's okay. You 7 times down, 8 times up, the Zen Buddhists tell us.
Yeah.
But you don't have, be not afraid, Jesus. Be not afraid. Your faith will get you through, as long as it's not blind faith.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Reverend, thank you as always for your time. It's always more than uplifting anytime I get to chat with you.
Brother, I thank you. I thank you.
These things are deep issues. They are schismatic issues within communities. They are schismatic issues within religious communities.
They're the issues of our time.
And they are quite literally, what would be seen, I suppose, in some rites as a sign of the time. Reverend.
Yes, well said.
Before we let you go, let everybody know where they can go to keep up with you, where they can go to contact you for sessions, they can go to contact you for healing. You're going to be doing some blogging, all kinds of fun stuff. Where can people go?
Yes. Well, this is a shameless plug, but if you want a website design,
don't go to
this man. Go
don't
to
do
Chris.
That.
Chris is wonderful. Okay? He did my website.
I did.
And I know you're going to like it. You can go catch me at MichaelJSCarter@gmail.com. You can go to Amazon.com. Keep watching Ancient Aliens. I've got some episodes coming up. And be not afraid. And don't forget to enjoy your life. You can come to me for counseling, distance healing. We can work all of that out. I'm here for you. And God be with you all.
Thank you so much, as always, Reverend. Truly appreciate
it.
Hold the line real quick while we close things out with the audience. Well, you are online, everybody, checking out all of the amazing work of Reverend Michael J.S. Carter at MichaelJSCarter.com. Make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is where you can find all the episodes. That's where you can find our video channel, complete with all of the video channels from YouTube of our guests, where you can easily like and follow their stuff as well. That's also where you can find your link to Curious Research, where you can get your copy of the Field Observation and Encounter Log. If you are an investigator in the world of paranormal, UFO, UAP, cryptozoology, this is your back pocket field log to write your data down in the field as it happens. If you're taking witness statements, things like that, this is your place to put all your scientific data in a scientific way so that it's ready to shake hands with science come the day that you need to do so. Thank you, as always, everybody, for your open hearts, your open minds. That is what makes the conversation. And without the conversation, humanity does not march forward. So remember, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. To download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault,
or become a sponsor of Curious Realm, visit our website at CuriousRealm.com. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast and video services, CuriousRealm.com, as well as KGRA Radio, APR TV, and the official Curious Realm app for Roku devices. Curious Realm is a proud member of the Ground Zero Media family of podcasts. For more shows and members-only content, visit groundzeroplus.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.